This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
New criminal charges in the cheating diesels scandal, plus political nonprofits, and when an unpaid fine means you can't vote. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. About 7 hours from now, the Federal Reserve is set to snap a news bulletin that it's cutting interest rates by 0.25%. That would be the first time since we emerged from the Great Recession that interest rates fall. A smidgen of stimulus like this would be an odd tactic given where we are with low inflation and near full employment. Some of this is the Fed trying to counteract slower business investment. Given the uncertainties of the trade war, U.S. consumers, for their part, are still out there consuming. Now to a story about revealing who is behind some big money in politics. A federal judge in Montana has struck down an IRS rule on political donations. The rule had said certain nonprofit groups no longer had to report their donors to the tax people. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington is on the line with more on this rule.
Well, David, it applied to organizations known as social welfare groups. These are nonprofits that can get involved in politics as long as they don't spend more than half their budgets on it. So this would include the political arms of the NRA, AARP, the Chamber of Commerce. These groups pushed for the rule. They said when they reported their donors' names, the names leaked out, even though they're not supposed to be public. Opponents of the rule said if these groups didn't have to report their donors, there could be more foreign influence over U.S. elections.
And why did this judge overturn the rule?
Well, he said the IRS didn't allow enough time for public comment on the new rule. The IRS said it didn't need a full comment period because it was just a small change.
Little one, huh? So what happens now?
Well, for now, these nonprofits will have to continue reporting their donors to the IRS. The lawsuit was brought by Montana Governor Steve Bullock, who also happens to be running for president. Montana said that it relies on donor information from the IRS to decide on exemptions from state taxes. And because of the ruling, Montana and other states are going to have access to it.
All right, Nancy, thank you. Let's do the numbers. FTSE in London is down 0.6%. The S&P future here is up 0.1%. Apple's quarterly results late yesterday, iPhone sales down, but revenue up 1% given strength elsewhere in the business. Apple stock is up 4.2% in pre-market trading. The former chief executive of the car company Audi, Rupert Stadler, has been charged in Germany with fraud and false advertising over his alleged involvement in the 2015 diesel emissions scandal. Three other unnamed people are facing similar charges. BBC business correspondent Theo Leggett has more.
The scandal erupted in September 2015 when the Volkswagen Group admitted deliberately using illegal emissions control software to bypass official pollution tests in the United States. It later emerged that similar software had been fitted to millions of vehicles sold around the world. The former chief executive of the group, Martin Winterkorn, was charged with fraud in Germany earlier this year. He's also under indictment in the United States. At the time of the scandal, Rupert Stadler was head of Volkswagen's subsidiary Audi. Prosecutors claim that although he was well aware that cheating was going on by September 2015 at the latest, he still allowed hundreds of thousands of affected vehicles to be sold.
Theo is with the BBC. In more than half of U.S. states, having unpaid fines or court fees can render a person ineligible to vote on Election Day. This is about people who had once been convicted of a felony but who've served their time. This situation affects low-income people disproportionately, which sounds to many like a discriminatory income test for voting in America. Danielle Lang is co-director of voting rights at the nonpartisan advocacy group Campaign Legal Center. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Just about all states prevent people convicted of felonies from voting, but many states have a system where you can get back the right to vote after you do your time, essentially. But what is this? In some states, there are restrictions based on if you still owe money to the government?
That's absolutely right. So in the vast majority of states, 48 states and the District of Columbia, you will lose your right to vote for some amount of time after you have a past conviction. But also the vast majority of states will give you your right to vote back at some point after you have served your time. But it turns out that about 30 states could end up refusing you the right to vote and denying you the right to vote because you still owe outstanding fines and fees related to your past convictions.
So advocates like yourself see the system as almost like a means test, a wealth test for being able to vote in a particular state.
We see it as a modern day poll tax, and it's a stain on our democracy. You know, we got away from poll taxes and hinging the right to vote on how much money you have in the 1960s. But through the felony disenfranchisement and rights restoration system, we actually have a number of states that continue to impose poll taxes, but just on those who are involved in the criminal justice system.
Now, we could have a separate discussion about fines. Are they exorbitant? Are they applicable? Do they discriminate? But that's not exactly the argument you're making. You're saying if there are penalties for not paying fines, that's one thing, but it shouldn't be you're banned from voting if you owe these fines.
There's a long line of cases even outside the right to vote context that say that states cannot punish people simply because they cannot pay outstanding fines and fees. These are folks who cannot afford to pay. And so the state isn't going to get any benefit by creating a unfair and discriminatory system that locks out poor people from the ballot box.
To change this requires state-by-state efforts. Do you think you'd have wider public support? I mean, these are convicted felons. Do they have a constituency?
They absolutely do. When the American people are polled on this issue on a bipartisan basis, Americans believe that people with past convictions deserve second chances and they should have the right to vote. They pay taxes. They're parts of our community. They send their children to our schools and they deserve to have the same voice as the rest of us.
Danielle Lang is co-director of Voting Rights and Redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, there are two states that allow people serving time for felony crimes to vote, even from prison, Maine and Vermont. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.